Hey founders, this is the SaaS Boss Show, the podcast for SaaS founders in the growth stage who want to get unstuck, build high-performing teams, and get clarity about how to build a profitable startup. Every week, I interview SaaS consultants, coaches, and experts who work with dozens of startups just like yours and share their best strategies to overcome the daily challenges of growing a profitable SaaS. My name is Natalie Luniva, and I'm a growth and leadership coach to SaaS founders, and I'm also married to a SaaS founder, and I'm so pleased that you've joined us on this conversation. Hi, everyone. Today, it is my pleasure to interview Jennifer Musselman about existing teams issues and how to make system-level improvements. Jennifer Musselman is an emotional intelligence expert and an accomplished executive coach. She has more than 20 years of experience. Her superpower lies within her ability to connect, clarify, and transform the needs of a business through its most precious commodity, its leadership. Welcome to the show, Jennifer.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Tell us, how did you get started coaching startup founders?
Oh, I have had such an interesting career journey. I worked for Viacom, MTV Networks, Kids and Family Television, and Brand Communications, and started recognizing that the leadership at that time, when we started going through a really volatile time in revenue and ratings, was not really handling things well. And I decided to throw myself back into graduate school to understand psychology and to better understand what I think they could have been doing better, but which I didn't have the education to be able to articulate and ask for what it was that I needed as an executive at the company. So what played out was like a lot of workplace dynamics and power struggles, and it made it not a fun place anymore after having had a really wonderful work experience for over a decade. And then understanding and getting an education in clinical psychology led me to working in other various entities. I helped launch a behavioral healthcare startup during the Obamacare that focused on how people cope in the workplace or don't cope effectively, more likely. And then I got into startup as a consultant. I was doing psychological interventions, combining my business background with my psychology master's education and training, and started going into startups doing a lot of what I call founder sessions, which is frankly really doing couples therapy with founders who are in conflict, and really taking my clinical psychology education and working directly with startup teams who never really managed a growing or scaling company before and are kind of out of their wheelhouse. But because I'd been in a large scale company, Fortune 500 company, for many decades and had been where they needed to go, and because I have a clinical psychology background, I was able to help lead them to where they needed to go strategically in a way that I think a lot of other people haven't been able to accomplish.
Very interesting. So what are some biggest challenges of growing a startup that you found when working with those founders?
Well, a lot of times it can be just limited resources. You know, you have a certain amount of funding, and a lot of times the biggest operation expense are employees. And so how do you manage headcount with the need for actual money to do like digital spend or to implement new platforms to optimize your customer service phone system, right? And so oftentimes I think in a new business, a founding team is really struggling a lot with like, where's the best place for us to put our limited funds, including the people who are the founding members, you know, are all thinking like we need money to be able to do our jobs well. So I have to say resources are one of the biggest issues that cause conflict if not well managed by leadership. I would also argue that if you don't lay down the foundation for an organizational chart in the beginning with clear job descriptions, as you start to develop and scale the business, people are going to start fighting about whose responsibility it is or isn't. If there's not a clear idea of who's supposed to be handling it, either it's not going to get done or people are going to start fighting about whose responsibility it is. A perfect old school example is over a decade ago when I worked at MTV Networks, Nickelodeon, that was when the internet started to really take off, and social media specifically. We did not know who was supposed to be handling the promotion of our clients, of our talent, of our business. And so from a technical standpoint, we just started fighting amongst our departments about who was responsible for it. And part of it was because the leadership was trying to wrap their heads around this new platform that they didn't even understand how it was going to affect their business. So that started creating a conflict amongst the departments and the people that worked there.
The question that I have here, thinking what our listeners would say, but Jennifer, isn't organizational charts and job description, isn't that for like big companies? I'm a company of 5 or like 10. Do I really have to have it?
Oh, wow. Yes. Not having an organizational chart, whether it's someone who's working as a CEO versus someone who's working as the COO, I've certainly gone into businesses early on where, I had a business partner, and because we didn't have an operating agreement, we started creating conflict about who's responsible for what and where we were spending the money. So just like division of labor at home, who's going to do the dishes versus who's going to do the cooking, in a small team, you still want to have a chart of whose primary responsibility. It doesn't mean you're not going to jump in and be the support system, but if everybody's trying to do and be everything in running a ship to running a company, then everyone's going to start bumping into each other. Conflict's going to happen because you need structure. That'd be like asking people on the street to not have stoplights and not have, driving on the right side of the street. It's mayhem. So you need organizational charts to help create structure, accountability, and to enable scale in an organized fashion. It does not mean that you're not jumping in and supporting someone else in another division that's their primary responsibility. It simply means that person is the responsible party. Does that make sense?
It does. I've read this book called Managing Oneself by Peter Drucker, and the quote stood out to me. Two moving bodies in contact with each other create friction.
Yes.
That's so interesting. That's exactly the case. But I think so many of us don't think of it this way. We think that when we hire, so for example, if I'm the founder, I am by myself, and I'm hiring one more person, then we together are going to be basically doing the work of two people, right? So we're going to be twice as productive, doing twice much stuff, accomplishing twice as much. Which is usually not the case if we don't have things in place. Why do you think teams are inefficient?
The foundational reason I believe most teams are inefficient is because a leader, whether it's the head of the company or the heads of a department, number one, do not feel psychological safety to suggest new ways of doing business. Two, because there's not enough structure that clearly outlines and defines what the needs of the business are or the vision or direction of the company. And three, because there's no process workflow in how people are communicating status of projects and expectations and accountability for projects. And lastly, a bigger issue is just simply put, social styles, the way people communicate with each other often becomes, when we're not versatile and understanding someone else's way of communicating, creates conflict as well.
Tell us more about social styles. That's so interesting.
Yeah. So social styles is a really important component for creating cohesiveness and harmony in a work style. A lot of people have done things like Myers-Briggs and some of the other DISC, I think, and that's a really good sort of self-discovery psychological assessment. But my preference is TRACOM social styles, and the reason being is because not only are you finding out about your style, but you're learning about other people's style, and it's only broken down into 4 categories.
Can you say the name of it again?
It's called Social Styles, and it's produced by TRACOM, TRACOM. And it's, you have to, I'm a certified facilitator of this. And what you do is you take this assessment, in my opinion, is the best assessment to take is when someone else is taking the assessment about you. So you send it out to several people. That creates a report that then the report will establish the key experiences or patterns that people experience of you in your role as an employee or as a leader. And from that, people learn, rather an individual learns about him or herself and how they communicate. But because of the way the program is designed, you also learn about the other three styles and what their orientation, their personal needs, and their growth areas are, as well as sort of like their backup responses when they're not feeling like they're getting their needs met. So if we were to send the assessment out to several people, and we'll use me as an example, they would come back and they would probably identify me as a driver style. That would mean I want to see action. My need is just results. I've been given this task or this department. I need to make sure that things are running efficiently and that I can see that we are progressing. And my growth is to listen. So that might mean that a driver, a leadership person or employee might need to take a backseat in a meeting and be willing to just sort of listen and explore more rather than just quickly send things to actionable items. What makes this so effective is someone's versatility style. So when you get this assessment back, you will find out how versatile you are to the other three styles. And if you're not versatile, you will have a really hard time being cohesive and collaborative in a collaborative working environment. So your goal is, even if you're a primary, driver, let's say, you can still be effective by being able to understand the other people's styles and coming at them with their needs when you communicate with them versus coming at them with your needs. Now, I need to acknowledge, I'm also a licensed marriage and family therapist. I'm a psychotherapist by trade. So frankly, I use these in both working with families and couples as much as I work with using this with people in teams. And so another example would be there's an amiable style. When that style is people oriented, their need is personal security and their growth is to initiate. So you'll find that style has a hard time taking initiation and moving things forward. As you can imagine, with a driver style who wants results, those can often be in conflict. So being able to understand the other person's needs and being able to communicate in a way would really help one another in getting things done and creating a more cohesive environment. Hmm.
How many social styles are there?
4. Amiable, analytical, driver, expressive.
So did I get it right that the team is doing the assessment for the leader and then the leader does the assessment for the team members?
So every individual in either a department or an entire founding team would do the assessment for each other. So you as an individual identify who you're sending the assessment out to. And so let's say a CEO would send it to their direct reports and maybe some lower level employees to get a good roundabout sense of, how people experience them. A manager in a department might send it out to several of their colleagues, some of their direct reports, and their leader. Does that make sense?
Yep. And how much time approximately takes to complete a task like this?
The assessment takes about 10 to 15 minutes online.
Very good. One of the founders that I talked to, I think we came up with a really good solution for him because his question was, okay, so we have multiple people that work on the team. And then each of those people is really like has their own style of doing the way that they prefer doing. So maybe they are, a reader or a listener, for example. So they have their own style, how they want to get the information and how they want it to be summarized. Do they prefer, to speak to someone and that's the way of putting together their thoughts, or they would much rather write an email, and outline everything there. And that's how they outline the vision, their thought process. So what you are saying is that just by taking this test, both the leader and the team can analyze and understand what each of the team members' preferences are and whether they are more like they prefer doing the things this way or the other way.
It's maybe not as much about how, like, the communication style by phone as it might be by how we have dialogue, right? So if I feel like you're asking something from me and the way you speak to me, Natalie, feels attacking to me because you say it in more of a direct approach, and I might feel attacked by that, I'm going to start developing and projecting onto you personality traits that may not be true about you. But because I feel attacked by the way you speak to me, and that could be everything from a cultural issue to just your personal social style, to modeling from your childhood, I'm going to start developing ill feelings towards you. And that can make me start behaving in different ways. I could attack back. I could start becoming passive aggressive and making, getting information from me difficult. So it makes it difficult for you to get your job done. Right? So those are all things that start playing out on a psychosocial, emotional issue that make it difficult to make the company run smoothly, but you can't really see is happening. So it's less about platform and more about behavioral and emotional issues that are arising in the way that people are communicating with each other because of not understanding the way the other person experiences the world.
I have experienced exactly what you're talking about. About 8 years ago, I was thrown into a leadership position without having any experience. And being from a different cultural background, I definitely had some clashes of personalities because I was not aware of this. And when I thought that I was communicating my thoughts really well and I tried to be direct, people perceived me as more of aggressive, and that's why they did not really want to maybe share with me thoughts, because they did not feel secure or that I am on their side. So absolutely, I hear what you're saying, and I think so many founders will find this useful as well.
Great. That's exactly what I'm talking about. And frankly, people will show up because they're getting paid, but these are the things that will start making people want to disconnect from working at the company, start looking for other jobs. These are the same things that make marriages fail, whether it's a marriage or you're talking about a business. If they start feeling conflict with their colleagues and it's not really getting addressed, it's usually because there's a misunderstanding, but when we're not addressing it, because there are some people who are afraid of conflict or confronting issues, then it's just going to continue to make people either show up for work, but not really put their heart into it, or start looking for other jobs. So really working on that psychological foundation, and it's really the leadership's responsibility to help people feel comfortable creating psychological safety to address these issues in a way that is solvable and feels like we can still have conflict and create healthy outcomes from that, including growth and innovation.
Absolutely. And it's not delivered too late, because what I found, what often happens is that we do not deliver the feedback early enough, because giving feedback is hard. Telling someone that you'd rather them do something the other way, or that they, you know, did not achieve something that you would really want them to achieve, is hard. And what do founders tend to do? They tend to pile all of this information and the feedback, and they don't deliver it early enough. And what happens in 2 to 3 months or a few months down the road? All of this feedback that we have not shared is being shared on the day that we decide to let go of that person.
Right. That's exactly right.
We talked about workflows and processes. What are some processes and workflows that we need to have in place in order for our communication to be effective?
Some of the workflow processes that need to be in place is an agreed upon platform where we share an exchange of status of information, status of projects, accountability, next steps, right? And it needs to be very clearly outlined. A lot of people might use Slack, or they'll use, you know, a base Camp or other formats, Trello, you know, to communicate so that everyone kind of stays abreast of what's happening and who's responsible. Now, I heard you say earlier that there are some founders who accept and recognize that every individual have their own way of communicating preference. And I value that and I understand that. And on a small team, there's a certain amount of flexibility that someone can have with that. But when you start looking at more than 5 to 10 people, not having a cohesive place where they just have to get sort of on board with putting information and collating it in one place, it's going to get out of control. So I do value and recognize that if I want to reach James, and James, the best way to reach him is to, you know, call him because he responds better to phone calls than he does texts or email, then I'm going to do that. But in order for me as the leader of the company to feel like everyone's working together cohesively, I need to get their buy-in to transfer data in one place that we can all communicate and acknowledge this is where the project is at, this is where it needs to go, here are the deadlines, and where are we at with meeting those deadlines, and who's responsible for making sure that these parts of the deadline are being met. Because if we're all doing a lot of work on one project, it will get messy. Just like if you were pulled into a race car track and, you know, the person who's looking at the engine needs to not get in the way of the person who's changing the tire, but you still all need to work on the car at the same time. So knowing who's working on what part of the project and what deadlines are responsible to help the other people working on the same project is really, really important to making sure that we meet all expectations and move the project in a timely fashion.
What you've mentioned a minute ago is communication guidelines, I think. I found it so important to have and think about communication guidelines. What communication guidelines is really is for you to explain that in Slack, we have instant messages, basically. So if you need an immediate answer, then you Slack me with this question. If you have like a question about SOP, for example, or like specific guidelines, then guidelines we have in this, we track in this program. If this is a question about specific project or a task or something, then we communicate this within the task management system. So I think having these communication guidelines is, again, it might be so easy to dismiss,
right?
Thinking that it's not as important, but for people that are joining your team, I do find that it's very, very important. So I would say that this is one of the pieces of the puzzle when you are onboarding your new hires.
That's a great point. And frankly, it really will help the new hires feel very connected and get them up to speed very quickly, because they can take information and take it in as almost if they're like doing a research project and just review the historical data that's been there to better understand quickly what, you know, any of the challenges that has come up in the past and identify, you know, who are the partners and how are they all working together? Who do they go to for what, without actually necessarily having to do a lot of asking of questions, though I always encourage, especially new employees, to ask questions. So I firmly agree with you.
So let's talk about some actionable steps. What founders can do in order for them to improve their existing issues within the team, basically make improvement within the whole company? What are some actionable steps they need to take to go from, we don't know what we're doing, we are not communicating properly, everything is a mess, to being more organized, knowing where each of the team members contribute, and what needs to happen for everyone to work efficiently?
First and foremost, they have to create an environment that, you know, where number one, they clearly communicate their values. I'm talking about, why are we all working together? What are we all trying to achieve here? And we have to get the buy-in for everyone. Don't just assume that just because they accepted a position that they are connected to the larger purpose. So your job as a leader from top down is to really make sure that the purpose of why you're doing what you're doing is critical foundation, so that people want to be more invested and want to engage in some of the more discourse or difficult tasks at hand.
So basically, think about the vision And communicate that to your team is number one.
And frequently. It can't be just an onboarding.
Oh, it can be just once and that's not enough?
No, it needs to be splattered on the walls in an artistic way. It needs to be made into, you know, a game at times, you know, over corporate onboarding. Googlers are called Googlers, and there's like, that's not very googly when someone's behaving a certain way. Like, it needs to be, you know, written into the DNA of every employee. So not just telling them at the beginning, but revisiting the values and the mission on a constant basis and incorporating it into the fabric of what we're producing, how we're communicating what we're producing across all lines of business. That's number one. Number two, we need to certainly be communicating with individual employees more than just once a year on how they're performing. Letting people know and asking, you know, how they're doing. But more importantly, I see a lot of clients who are frustrated that they're not getting constant, immediate feedback from their bosses. I understand at a startup, it's difficult because everyone's got their head down and they're just trying to rush, move fast, break things. But it's by not communicating frequently to an employee about how they're doing, what you need from them, what your expectations are, if they're meeting expectations more than once a year, as you mentioned earlier, Natalie, that starts creating people who feel disengaged and as if they don't matter and that they're just there to complete tasks. That is not going to help you achieve your purpose. And it doesn't create camaraderie. So keeping people informed regularly about the vision and the mission and the values of the company and where the company is headed, keeping people up to date about how they're performing against the measurements that we've laid out for them on a regular basis, and then encouraging them and inspiring them to rise to the occasion when they're not meeting expectations is really important. So another system level improvement that founders can do to improve and scale the company is to encourage dialogue on a regular basis amongst employees. And that includes creating a psychologically safe environment where we turn to our colleagues or our bosses and we hold them accountable. If there's something where we feel we were let down on, it's okay in that moment in a productive manner to address the issue. This is really important because the leadership has to create the psychological safety, not just saying, I have an open door policy. That's crap. You have to actually encourage and invite people into your office, create a team environment, take people out to coffees. How are things going? Address the conflict that you're hearing about rather than just hoping that they figure it out. If they're not figuring it out themselves, then you have to address it. But you also need to inspire and encourage them to figure out how to figure it out for themselves rather than avoid conflict or run from it or get anxious about it. Another really important part of scaling a company that I really put on the leader is their self-management. One thing I find that a lot of executives don't do is handle their stress levels. And that creates another really uncomfortable, toxic workplace environment. So when they are feeling stressed, they don't know a lot of times the difference between when to communicate that things are difficult for the company, whether it's not hitting our numbers, we're not getting our financing as quickly as we thought that we would. And instead, they withhold information, they start removing themselves from the company, and employees start panicking or feeling uncomfortable and looking for other work. So one of the things that I really work with a lot of leaders on is communicating frequently with all hands on deck, conversations with honesty, vulnerability, and reassurance that, you know, things are a little tight right now, so we're going to have to make some changes. And I'd like to come to you to talk about what some of those changes might be that we might want to consider and get the team on board, especially a small team. So I really just want to make a really strong point that the leader's willingness and availability to show up vulnerably, but also with clarity and onboarding of buy-in from employees is a critical component to getting employees to stick around and want to, you know, do what they can to support the company, especially during difficult times. Another way to make sure that your company is communicating effectively is through, as we discussed, platforms that allow everyone to see transparently what everyone is working on. We don't need to be in the weeds, but we do need to make sure that we feel like our teammates are meeting the needs that we need in order to do our jobs. So again, another platform system, management system that helps us soothe ourselves around, I'm meeting my expectations or what you need from me, and that I can trust that my colleagues are doing the same for me.
The main question here is, what can we as founders do in order to make system level improvements for the company to have a better communication? So number one is creating values and communicating that. Number two is communicate to the team members more often. Performance review once a year is not enough. The third is encouraging dialogue. The fourth one so far is self-management for the founders.
Yes.
One question that the founder can ask their team in order to start the dialogue of untangling the problem or trying to understand the issue and finding their solution is asking this question. Do you think that we are an effective team? Or do you think that we are just doing something and may not be at the top of our game? I think this question starts the conversation without blaming anyone. Mm-hmm. It is really asking for advice and suggestions and observations from the team. Mm-hmm. And then would you say that the next step would be probably to take the social styles test that you've mentioned?
So I'm in agreement with you that that open-ended question doesn't blame, and it encourages and inspires people to share. I think, though, I do want to add to that, that the leader needs to start with responding by saying, for instance, one of the things that I'm noticing we could do better at would be X, Y, and Z. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's really, yep.
That's showing up with that vulnerability that I'm talking about, that leadership needs to really drive to encourage that safety for team members to show up the same way. The next thing I think that we should probably address here is that what you're talking about is an adaptive leadership style. So I'm getting my doctorate in change management and leadership right now, and there's a plethora of leadership styles that one can take on. But one of my favorite is adaptive. And the reason that is because in order to move a system level change, you need to identify what the problem is. So if there's an issue at hand, let's say a healthcare system didn't properly prepare and a lot of their patients an appointment in an effective manner, and they're 3 months out before they can get an appointment, and the employees are getting frustrated, and the patients are getting frustrated. So you need to identify, is that a technical issue? Is that an adaptive issue? Or is that a technical and adaptive issue? Why that matters, because if it's just a technical issue, that's something where employees are saying, hey, the reason why they can't get their appointments is because the platform that we use, the coding isn't working, and it's a broken system. We need to redo our entire technical system in order to get them their appointments more quickly. They would look to leadership to fix that. That's a pretty easy buy-in once the problem has been identified as a technical issue. The challenge becomes if the leadership decides that they don't think it's that big of a problem, and then we need to start looking at, well, is it a deeper issue? Where else might be it be coming from. Maybe this, the platform that's not working. Maybe it's also that the workflow that we have is not working either. Well, that's going to also require an adaptive change, whereby the leadership is saying, we will change that platform system and get it better functioning through the system we use, the coding. But until we have the proper questions that the people who, you know, customer service who answers the phone, or that this department cooperates better with this department, it's never going to work. So that would become a technical and adaptive issue. And then an adaptive issue all in and of its by itself is an issue that really requires the employees and the culture and leadership to work together to figure out, because there's no clear answer and they all have to come together to figure out how do we resolve that. So I want to just sort of clarify, I think in the example that you gave me, an adaptive leadership style is a really great way to approach an issue, because you have to start with like, what kind of problem are we talking about?
Okay. I'm still trying to understand what would be the next step for me to try and start resolving this problem for my team as a founder. So then what would be the next step after that?
Just to clarify, the next step is to understand what kind of problem are we dealing with? Like, is it adaptive? Is it technical, or is it technical and adaptive? So if you don't have, like, if you don't know really what the problem is, then we don't know how to go about solving it. So you have to ask some of the questions that you're talking about to identify where the issue really is so that you know how to solve it.
What I find is that so many founders say that their biggest problem is, high churn or not enough traffic, not enough demos, or low conversion from trial to paid customers. But everyone completely ignored that if their team would be more cohesive, then that's really what's holding them back. And that's really the cause of having the inefficient team. I also find that we don't know what we don't know. So for founders, having understanding that they have a team problem with the communication and communication problem,
yes,
is a big step, because they don't know what it is. They know that they don't have enough demos. They know that their MRR is not there. What would you say to a founder like this?
I would say that to your point, again, it goes back to, first, we have to identify what the issue is, if it's adaptive, technical, or technical and adaptive. But most of them are rarely going to be just technical. The adaptive component comes into, people aren't buying into the values of the company. A company might say, we value this, or value being bold, but then really the leadership is behaving differently. And so people, you know, don't buy into when the leadership says that we are going to employ new tactics. They don't trust anymore. So that becomes some of the psychological damage that leadership needs to start better controlling or managing, because they've lost the trust and the belief in the purpose and the mission and the leadership to actually handle the problems and B, the vision of the company anymore. Lastly, to your point, a lot of the issues are because resources are spread so thin in startups, departments start fighting amongst each other for those resources or blaming each other for why it's not working. Because the challenge really becomes that they're not communicating, as opposed to trying to better understand what each department really needs to better then be able to employ tactics and strategies that support one another versus blaming and trying to get more resources for their own department. And then again, if they don't have a communication style that they feel is cohesive, or that they even like the person in another department or even in their own department, they're not going to want to communicate with them. Things are going to start getting held up in production. And if they're on the front lines and they're trying to convert clients, let's say, and they have, you know, they don't enjoy their job, they don't like coming in because they don't like the people that they work with, they are going to show up because they're getting paid, but they are not going to give the best that they can. That's going to start creating bigger problem issues around revenue, converting clients, you know, growth, all of that.
I find that so many founders, they fear to be the leader and to have a team. Some of the founders who has had a prior experience working with a team, they understand all the challenges and the problems, and I think they may not have resolved the problems that they've had in the past. Maybe they thought that the hire that they've made did not work out. And I see that really in majority of the cases, it is inefficient communication of the task at hand, the expectations, and what needs to happen. So in a case like this, where the founder may just struggle to get the results, or they're getting subpar work from their team, what would be your recommendation to a founder like this?
Honestly, the first thing that a founder like that needs to do is take a look at how they're communicating what they're communicating. If a founder is repeatedly feeling that a team or particular individuals don't quite understand or aren't making progress in a way that they are asking for them, that founder needs to take some accountability and say, what am I not doing that's conveying what it is that I need?
And why do you think that that's a problem of a founder?
Because I think a lot of people come from this position of, well, I get it. Why shouldn't they understand what I'm trying to say? And there, and again, I go back to the way people communicate. People interpret and have their own filters and, you know, bring to the table their own personal experiences, both from other work environments and from their family dynamics into the workplace. And so the way that they hear things or the way they understand things is not automatically the way that the founder is trying to communicate it. So asking for clarity, or asking for them to summarize what it is that they understood me to say, really helps in clarifying and getting on the same page about what it is I need them to do and what my expectations are. A lot of founders are not clear what they want either. So they come into a room and they say, they make these grand statements about, you know, we need to figure out why we're not converting clients. Okay. That's a really good, large, general statement to make. But we don't just, a founder shouldn't just say, here's what we need to do. The founder's responsibility is to also give them the tools to help them figure out, how do we do that? How are we going to do this? Let's talk about, what do you guys think are some good ways for us to figure out how to better convert clients more immediately? And we have a powwow. And we hear from different lines of business, and then we try it. We explore it. But when a founder comes in and makes a generalized statement, like, we need to figure out why we're not converting more clients, and then expects that to change, that's not leadership. That's not someone who's guiding the ship. And there's no strategy involved in that.
We have a few minutes left. What are some final wisdom nuggets that you'd like to share with the audience?
I think the most important thing that founders really miss the mark early on in their careers is their self-work, the self-reflection. You cannot lead a team if you have not done a good job in developing your own blocks in your own areas that you need to work on. So I'm not asking a founder to be perfect, but leaders who come in and assume that, you know, just because they founded a company and are in charge, and so people should listen to them, are going to quickly find out that people might show up for work, but that does not mean that they're going to be effective, and it could cost you the company. And so if there's enough coming to you about maybe your leadership style, rather than just pointing fingers at them and saying, oh, it's the people we hired, the most important thing you do is take a look at yourself and say, I need to pay attention, because there are enough people that I respect saying that they don't understand where the company is going, or that they had concerns about how the company was being run. That's your responsibility as the leader and the founder of the company. So doing your self-work, reflecting, working with someone, taking these, you know, tests, whether it's a 360 assessment, and really owning some of the difficult things that people might be saying about you, that's really the first and most important thing in your development of being an effective leader. And only by being an effective leader are you going to have a company that you can scale.
I recently attended a workshop about engaging teams and how to create the teams that are engaged. And a very interesting piece of information that I took and kind of wrote it down to remember for the future is there was a study done where they asked employees to list all the problems and things that they would want in the company to change or to improve. And they then consolidated all of those answers and came down to 15 major things. And it turned out that 13 out of 15 items on the list that employees would like to be improved has to do with the leader, something that leader could have improved, something that leader could have been doing better. So I think that's a good piece of information to leave with the listeners is when you have a problem, think what you could have done better in the situation. Maybe it's a communication. Maybe it's something that people did not understand or something that you could have done better.
So it really falls on leadership to create a system that is cohesive, whether it is from workflow process to finding the right person to do the job to making sure that you know, when there's conflict, that it's that it's addressed and it's a healthy, productive conversation, and that they communicate frequently with employees around, you know, what they're trying to achieve and including some of the challenges that they're having in trying to achieve it.
Jennifer, thank you so much for your time. Tell us more where our listeners can find you.
Yeah, so my listeners can find me at jennifermusselman.com, and it's Jennifer, and my last name is spelled Musselman.com, and they can find me at My Startup Therapist on Instagram.
Thank you so much for your time, Jennifer.
Thank you so much, Natalie. Have a great day.
That's it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening to the SaaS Boss Show. If you found this content interesting, I'd really appreciate it if you take just a second to leave a review on iTunes so that founders just like you can learn about this show. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast, and I'll be back with another interview next week.